בזורנו מי בין הגויים ונפוצוצינו כנס מיער כסבבויורץ וקורם בזורנו Zoiseinu kaneis Miyal kisuvve yore Ahoy vikorei Bizuvvureinu Miyibay nagovuvuyim Unifu zoiseinu Zureinu Mi bein Agoyim Unifutsoiseinu Kanes Miyal kisvevayo Yeah.
What a sweet voice. That was Uziah Tzadok doing the vocals. The CD is Shlomo Yehuda Rishnitz, and he is writing all the songs. It's Yossi Rubin and David Fadia present Shlomo Yehuda Rishnitz, I think that's how you say it. And before that, Mandy Werdiger. This disc is a Kenu on a Deret label, and it's Vakarev. Before that, Tim Sparks. Neshama is the disc on Tzadik Records. Chamisha Asar. And I think that brings us up to date. So I just want to share with you a little bit about the upcoming Shavuos observance and celebration. And I've got this around the year with the National Jewish Outreach Program. Let's see what they have to say about it. We know we've been counting up the Omer, the 49 days, so that we could physically and actively do something to go from a slave mentality, from leaving Egypt to standing at Sinai to get the law. And so it says Shavuot is a holiday, isn't it? Shavuot is the holiday that celebrates the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. You know, God, Charlton Heston, the Ten Commandments, the whole bit. This got a sense of humor. This is Shimon Apisdorf. The Torah, also known as the Five Books of Moses or the Bible, is the basic source of Judaism, Jewish law, practice, holidays, and all the essentials of Jewish identity that have molded, guided, and preserved the Jewish people over the millennia are rooted in the Torah. The Jews, a quick history. As a rule, distinct nationalities are bound together by a common history, a common language, and a common homeland. Not so the Jewish people. Though there was a time, some 2,500 years ago, when all Jews not only studied and prayed in Hebrew, but also haggled in the marketplace and told jokes and screamed at their children in Hebrew. This ceased to be the case when the Jewish nation was exiled from its homeland and took up residence in places like Fez, Minsk, Constantinople, Paris, Gibraltar, Sydney, Montreal, and Cincinnati. It can be said that for the last 2,000 years, we Jews have spoken more languages than any other people that have ever existed. About the only language we Jews didn't speak was our own, Hebrew. The same can be said for a sense of shared history. The Jews of today who live in Minsk, Morocco, and Montana have to go back thousands of years until they come to a place and time where their histories converge. And let's be honest, how many Jews know much about their family's histories of even 50 years ago, let alone the universally shared Jewish history of 2,500 years ago? Finally, let's reflect for a moment on our common homeland. Again, it's been well over 2,000 years since the Jewish people shared a common national residence. Even today, with the rebirth of Israel, most Jews are still more at home on Long Island or in the suburbs of London, Mexico City, or Vancouver than they are in Ramat Gan or Kiryat Shmona. Today, the Jewish people are a hodgepodge of histories, languages, nationalities, and cultures. It is difficult to fit Jewish history into any general taxonomy of national and religious development because it is a unique phenomenon. Indeed, the historian of the Jews is constantly faced with the problem of categorizing a process of which there is no other example anywhere. That's a quote from Paul Johnson, A History of the Jews. That Jewish thing. Despite the fact that so many Jews have seemingly so little in common, there exists a curious phenomenon that almost every Jew I've ever met has experienced. It's, quote, that Jewish thing. It's that thing that binds Ethiopian Jews to Park Avenue Jews, despite the fact that they don't share the same language or culture and would be hard-pressed to make heads or tails out of one another's religion. And if you think that they don't have much in common, try introducing either of them to a Jew from the Jerusalem neighborhood of Meir Shearim. So the obvious question must be asked. If we seem to have so little in common, why is it that we have so much in common? It's great. If we are truly brothers and sisters, despite sharing so little of what binds and defines other nationalities, what is it that nourishes our sense of collective identity, of peoplehood, of being part of a larger family? If the Torah gave to the Jews through the 2,000 years of wandering, which they were soon to begin, which a portable fatherland, as Heine would call it, an intangible and spiritual state, it kept them united despite every dispersion, proud despite every defeat, and brought them across the centuries to our own time, a strong and apparently indestructible people. That's a quote from Will Durant, The Story of a Civilization. And this is another topic here, Shavuot for the clueless but curious. If an anthropologist studying the Jewish people was asked to speculate about what would be Judaism's most revered, enduring, and observed holiday, it would be quite reasonable for her to respond, why Shavuot, of course. After all, that is the seminal holiday, the one that is a source for all things Jewish. In reality, just the opposite is the case. Time and again, demographic studies show that Shavuot ranks at the bottom of the list of Jewish practices. My own anecdotal surveys repeatedly show that most Jews have no idea what Shavuot is about or when and how it is celebrated. The next few pages are a brief overview of the basics of Shavuot. Our overview will begin with the roots of Shavuot in the Torah, with when and how it is celebrated, and what practices are central to its celebration. From there, we will take a closer look at some hidden spiritual gems in the lost holiday of Shavuot. Let's begin. The name of the holiday is Shavuot, isn't it? Well, perhaps one reason why Shavuot has fallen by the wayside of Jewish life is because nobody seems to know even what to call the holiday. The Torah itself ascribes three different names to this holiday. In one place, it is referred to as the Festival of Shavuot. The word Shavuot literally means weeks. In another place, the Torah calls the holiday the Festival of Katzir. The word Katzir literally means gathering or harvest. And in a third place, it is called the Day of First Fruits. The sages in the Talmud, when discussing Shavuot, or whatever name its name is, seem to ignore the Torah altogether and give it a whole new name. In the Talmud, Shavuot is known as Atzeret. The Hebrew word Atzeret means to restrain or to hold back. The prayer book. Finally, when one comes to synagogue for Shavuot prayer services, we find that the prayer book chooses the name Festival of Shavuot to identify the holiday. At the same time, the prayer book modifies the name by attaching the appellation the Day of the Giving of the Torah. So there you have it. The name of the holiday is, drum roll please, the Festival of Weeks, Gathering, Restraining, First Fruits, Giving of the Torah. In other words, Shavuot. Now that we know something about the name of the holiday, let's take a look at the date upon which it is celebrated. Well, let's see, he has quite a bit on Shavuot. I don't think I'm probably going to get to read all of that. We'll do a little bit more here. The Hebrew date. Shavuot is celebrated on the sixth day of the Hebrew month of Sivan, and the date on which the Torah was given. On the English calendar, you will usually find that Shavuot is celebrated somewhere between mid-May and early June. Shavuot weeks. In addition to Shavuot being celebrated on the 6th of Sivan, it is also celebrated precisely 7 weeks after Passover. Those 7 weeks between Passover and Shavuot are not just seven ordinary weeks. This seven-week time period is known as Sefirat HaOmer. During the 7 weeks of Sefirat HaOmer, there is a mitzvah, religious commandment, to count the 49 days of the 7 weeks as we travel from the holiday of Passover to that of Shavuot. This begins to explain why the holiday is called Shavuot, or weeks. Not only does Shavuot take place on the 6th of Sivan, the day on which the Torah was given, but also it marks the completion of the special 7 weeks of counting. So last night, we start counting in the Jewish festivals begin at sunset the night before. So last night, it was Netzach Sheva Malchut. The week is Malchut, which is majesty or kingship. And Netzach is victory or eternity. And I wear the colors that the Ari attributed to each of these midot, or things, ways to work on ourselves. So Nitzak is a light pink, and the whole week of Malchut is blue. So light pink within blue. And so I think we'll stop right there for now and listen to a little bit more music here on the voicemobile at WMFO in Medford, or at Tufts University.
Ooh.
Okay, I want to share a little bit more from this book on Around the Year with the National Jewish Outreach Program by Shimon Epistorf. And as I said, there's quite a lot in here about the holiday, but we'll go to this section. It's all about preparation. The time of the giving of our Torah. In the Shavuot prayers, we acknowledge the personality of the holiday with the word Zman Matan Torateinu, the time of the giving of our Torah. The emphasis here is on the giving of the Torah. In Hebrew, the word for giving, matan, is also the word for a gift, matana. The perspective this wording asks us to consider is twofold. The focus is firstly on God, the giver, and secondly on the fact that what he gave us, the Torah, is a gift. On Shavuot, God is the active party, so to speak, and our job is to be receptive to his gift. As we have seen, there aren't any special mitzvot that we are supposed to do on Shavuot. We don't do anything other than sit back, wait for God to present us with his gift, and then accept it. There is one little catch to all this, however. This gift of the Torah requires some preparation in order for us to be capable of accepting and holding on to it. In that sense, it's more like an academic university scholarship than a plain old birthday present. Universities offer scholarships, not only to students who have proven scholastic abilities, but also to those who demonstrate that they will genuinely value the opportunity and will be motivated to make the most out of their gift. To offer a full academic scholarship to someone who is loaded with intelligence and ability, but doesn't appreciate the value of higher education, is simply a waste. Now we can more fully understand the riddle of this holiday's name. The Hebrew word Shavuot means weeks. This is a reference to the 7 weeks that began with Passover and culminate on Shavuot. Isn't it curious, though, that a holiday would be named after what takes place before it instead of what actually takes place on it? The answer to this riddle is that from our perspective, Shavuot can be fully meaningful only if the time that precedes it is meaningful. There isn't much to do on Shavuot because the essence of Shavuot lies in the realm of preparation. We prepare to accept God's gift of the Torah so that on Shavuot he can give it to us. The curious name of the holiday tips us off to the fact that if we are to access the rich spiritual opportunities that exist within Shavuot, then we must pay close attention to the time that precedes the holiday. The essential preparation for Shavuot is attitudinal. It's about how we view the gift. We will now examine three of the essential factors of Shavuot preparations. It's a gift. If the Torah is a gift, then the question is, how does this inform and guide our preparation? The answer lies in the following perspective. To view the Torah as a gift means that in essence, it is for us. Just like when I buy my daughter a new bicycle or computer, it's for her, not for me. It's for her pleasure, not mine. For her good, not mine. I give her gifts because I love her, not myself. The same is true with the Torah. That the Torah is a gift implies that it's for us. It's for our pleasure, our good. It is meant to facilitate our success in life, our achievement of meaning. Think about it. If the Torah's instructions include a mitzvah to be sensitive to the needs and feelings of a widow or an orphan, then who are our acts of empathy and kindness for? Are they for us, for God, or for the widow and the orphan? Clearly, they are for the beneficiaries of our kind deeds because they are the ones in need. It can also be said that when we go out of our way to assist others, these acts are also for us because we need to learn to be more sensitive, responsive, and giving. But what about God? Does he need us to be sensitive? Certainly not, because God has no needs. God is complete and perfect in of himself. As such, he lacks nothing, has no deficiencies, and therefore doesn't gain anything when we are kind to one another. The same is true with giving charity, fasting on Yom Kippur, eating matzah, and not spreading gossip about people. Everything the Torah asks us to do is for us, not God. In truth, this perspective of giftness is the bedrock of all spirituality. Ultimate spirituality is found in a relationship with God, the transcendental source of all, and that relationship begins with a gift. Days count. We're fairly used to life the way it is, but imagine if our situation were a little different. Imagine if we were born knowing exactly how long we would live, right down to the last minute on the last day of our lives. Do you think we would look at life differently? How about every day of our lives? Certainly, as the final months of life ticked away, we would begin to relate to our allotted time a little differently than we would otherwise. One day in San Francisco, a dentist friend, while working on my teeth, told me that it was his 50th birthday. Well then, just 10 more years to live, to really live, I joked through the nitrous oxide. Knowing his delight in physical sport, I floated the possibility that his body might have only another 10 years of the energy and stamina necessary for his favorite endeavors, backpacking and wild river rafting. Though I was only half kidding and 55 years old myself at the time, he was apparently ripe to hear this. And a few months later, changed his office hours to a four-day week, finalized his divorce, and bought a new pair of skis. I've never seen him so lighthearted as when he speaks about how much more time he has to live by giving himself one extra day each week. That was a quote from A Year to Live by Stephen Levine. Now, Abraham was quite old. He came with his days, and God blessed him in every way. This is from Genesis. Now, these were the days of the years of the life lived by Abraham. 100 years and 70 years and 5 years from Genesis. While reflecting on the life of Abraham, founder of the Jewish people, the Torah makes a point of highlighting the days of his life. A man who was aware of his days and made each of them count launched the Jewish presence on the stage of history. 600 years after the passing of Abraham, his descendants were liberated from Egyptian bondage. 49 days later, they received the Torah. From that time forth, the Jewish people would commemorate the holiday of Shavuot by counting the 49 days that precede the holiday. This path of counting that returns all Jews to the foot of Mount Sinai is known as the Sefirah, the counting period. To Abraham, every day of the life possessed great value, meaning, and potential. Abraham's attitude toward the days of his life belied an all-encompassing love and value for life itself. The Torah is for people who have a deep regard for days, a deep regard for life. When we count the days leading to Shavuot, it's not a countdown. We don't count back from 49 days until we get to one. Rather, we count up. The first day of the Sefirah counting period is day one. The second day is day two, and so forth, all the way until day 49. Some people collect seashells, others collect antiques. Jews collect days. An essential prerequisite to Shavuot is striving to become a collector of days. To cherish not only life, but days. To embrace each day as a fresh opportunity for achievement, for meaning, for growth, for connection to God. After all, isn't that what really counts? 3. A goal, a direction, a purpose. We take for granted that people need goals in life, something to strive for. We take for granted that people without any sense of direction in life, people who see life as an aimless meandering path to nowhere, are in deep trouble. We take for granted that the difference between a person who lives with a sense of purpose and one who feels that he has no purpose at all is greater than the difference between night and day. A powerful way to conceive of the cognitive, cultural, and even in part the political life of a society is as a conversation. All we know of social reality is taken from the stream of unending conversations which constitute it. How could it be otherwise, since people never hear or learn anything else? With the exception of a few strikingly original people, individuals view the world in a manner that is in consonance with their society's conversation. This is Daniel Jonah Goldhagen. It's a quote of Hitler's willing executioners. We live in a society, a global society, whose conversation is built on the foundation of ideas like purpose and goals and direction, on concepts like striving to better oneself and the world one lives in, on dreaming, even attempting to forge a brighter future for the generations that will inherit the world we leave behind. It is almost impossible for us to imagine a society devoid of these ideas. If we were asked to conceive of people living not just without a sense of purpose, but without even the concept of purpose, we would imagine some Borg-like race of aliens devoid of heart and soul. Yet, once upon a time, that is precisely what mankind's conversation was like. All evidence points to there having been, in the earliest religious thought, a vision of the cosmos that was profoundly cynical. The assumptions that early man made about the world were, in all their essentials, little different in their assumptions that later more sophisticated societies, like Greece and India, would make in a more elaborate manner. As Henri Charles Puch says of the Greek thought in his seminal Man and Time, no event is unique, nothing is enacted but once. Every event has been enacted, is enacted, and will be enacted perpetually. The same individuals have appeared, appear, and will appear at every turn of the circle. It's a quote by Thomas Cahill, The Gifts of the Jews. In the ancient world, people saw all of history as nothing more than one big Broadway theater, and all of human life is nothing more than playing one role or another in Broadway's longest-running production. Whether you were an actress playing Grisabella in the original cast of Cats or Grisabella in a high school production, your lines were still the same, your part the same, and your future the same. You were just going through the same motions that countless others before you had gone through, uttering the same words that many more would echo after you. If we had lived in the second millennium BC, the millennium of Abraham, there could have canvassed all the nations and could have canvassed all the nations of the earth. On every continent and every society, Abraham would have been given the same advice that wise men as diverse in Heraclitus, Lao Tzu, and Siddhartha would one day give their followers. Do not journey, but sit. Compose yourself by the river of life. Meditate on its ceaseless and meaningless flow, on all that is past or passing or to come, until you have absorbed the pattern and have come to peace with the great wheel and with your own death and the death of all things. Again, from Thomas Cahill, The Gifts of the Jews. The Jewish nation left Egypt and headed out into the wilderness. But this was not a people without a purpose or a goal or a mission. This was a people who knew that, despite hundreds of years of brutal oppression, one day their situation would be different. This was a people who saw a mountain called Sinai, not just as another resting place in the wilderness, but as an ideal to strive for, as the embodiment of a mission to whose calling they would have to rise. In Egypt, the Jews were subjected not only to backbreaking labor, but also to spirit-breaking labor. They were ordered to build cities on unstable ground, only to watch the product of their efforts crumble, and then have to start the same work all over again. But this was a people who carried an ancient promise, a promise that one day, not only would they be free from, but they would be free to. For 49 days, the Jewish people traveled, not just away from Egypt, but to Mount Sinai. With each passing day, they moved closer and closer to their goal. But even more, with each passing day, they reaffirmed their belief that life could have a goal, that life didn't have to remain the way it had always been, that one doesn't have to be a prisoner of one's past, that there is no script called fate, and that, in fact, the scenes of a much brighter future are waiting to be written. The Torah that we received at Mount Sinai is nothing less than a revolutionary manifesto for changing the world. Our people have the great task of teaching humanity that we have just begun to scratch the surface of human greatness in biomedicine and molecular physics, as in so many other fields. We are just beginning to realize that while we have come so far, there is still much farther to go. In the realms of morality and spirituality, human dignity and human consciousness, the same is true. The Jews started it all, and by it, I mean so many of the things we care about, the underlying values that make all of us, Jew and Gentile, believer and atheist, tick. Without the Jews, we would see the world through different eyes, think with a different mind, and we would set a different course for our lives. There is simply no one else remotely like them. Theirs is a unique vocation. Indeed, as we shall see, the very idea of vocation, of a personal destiny, is a Jewish idea. Again, Thomas Cahill from The Gifts of the Jews. The Torah, our gift from Sinai, is a never-ending call to reach for more and more of our ultimate potential. So, the name of the holiday is Shavuot, weeks, and the soul of the holiday can be found in the days that precede it, days during which we strive to lift our vision. With each passing day, we look for yet another way to ready ourselves to accept God's gift and to embrace the privilege of being part of a people capable of inspiring the entire world. Beautiful. Thank you.
Ave yinu lecha, ave yinu lecha, ave yinu lecha.